Aboriginal woman. She's the backbone of our spiritual ways. Aboriginal woman. She's a key to a lot of men's hearts. So much pain has been inflicted on her. And just murdered and smashed that man.
And Reikin, we're coming through. Mark, first of all, thank you. This is Don White, once again, friends, on Anti-Psychiatry Radio, your proud producer and host, coming to you on October the 8th, the eve of Thanksgiving. And before I get into it, I just want to say, Audrey Redman is co-hosting this with me. Welcome to Anti-Psychiatry Radio, CKLN again. Audrey is, the outstanding former producer and host of Honor the Earth on CKLN for 8 years, right?
Thank you very much, Don, for inviting me. It's been about 2.5 years since I've stepped inside of CKLN studios, and it feels good. I really miss the community radio life, because it really is a life.
Well, we miss you. And listen, maybe, maybe this will be the start of something. maybe we'll get you on again.
Well, it's just too bad it has to be about an inquest that we're gathering.
I know.
And, of course, that's why you invited me here, because
yes.
I was able to sit in on Byron DeBosseguet's inquest.
Right.
And that was held in Toronto just this past month.
Right. So we're here, friends, to talk about. Audrey and I were monitoring, taking some notes on this recent inquest into the death of Ojibwe person, Brian DeBassage, or DeBassage, or DeBassage. DeBassage, thank you. 28 years old. The inquest lasted 2 weeks. Let me tell you, friends, I'll be just give you some high points of this tragic killing of a brother who was seriously abused and marginalized before the police shot him. He, at the time, on February 16th, 2.5 years ago, on February 16th, 26th. Yeah, 2008, or I think, yeah, I'm pretty sure it was February 16th, that he was in a convenience store, and at some point he took two lemons. He was accused of stealing, also accused of armed robbery after he took two lemons, for God's sake. And he goes across the street with being chased by the store clerk, who calls the police. The police come while he's in Oriel Parkway, which is at the Davisville subway station on the Young Line. And he's not bothering anybody. Brian isn't. But when the police come, they see him, and before you know it, there's a the police didn't bother to talk with him, with Byron. Byron, at the point, I guess, was under the influence, from what we hear, anyway, of having some drinks some time ago, under the influence of alcohol, which is not unusual for many people in our society, not just Aboriginal people. Anyway, they confronted him. Two policemen, Bradley Coots and John Tanner from 52 Division. You don't want to end up in 52 Division. I could talk about that, but we're not here to talk about that 52 Division and what they can do to you there. But before you know it, they asked, Brian was carrying a bottle. So maybe a bottle of booze or whatever, and he had it tucked under his arm. The police said, drop it. Drop the bottle. Brian refused. Then at some point, he brought out of his pocket a small knife, and nothing happened at that point until the police said, drop it. So there was another command. Brian didn't drop it. Byron, I should say. And then, according to police testimony, he lunged, that's their word, at them. This is 5 feet away. At one point, they were 20 feet away. At no point did the police bother to talk with Byron, to engage him in a conversation. They just commanded him, do this, do that. So what happened at some point, as I said, Brian lunged, and then the police, both of them, shot him at almost point-blank range. And while Byron was dying, not immediately, but soon thereafter in hospital, they handcuffed him, even though he was on the ground and couldn't move much, of course, after, with all the bullets in. I think there were 5 bullet holes, Audrey, I think they shot him in total.
And 4 hit him.
And then he died a few hours later, we hear, from at St. Michael's. So those were, I'm just summarizing just the bare facts. Now, Audrey, you were there for a number of times, and I was, but I'm very upset that there was no sensitivity, the questions about the police and Aboriginal people, certainly about the history of genocide on the part of the Canadian government, including the police. But I just thought I'd mention that because there was no context, it seems to me, that was brought out during the hearing. And we can get into the recommendations later of the coroner's jury.
We were talking out in the foyer before we came in here, and we were talking about the system as it is. And I think, you know, sitting on an inquest such as this is very loaded for everyone involved. And it was the Crown, her name was Cavion, and Squadron, Barry Squadron, was the defense for the family. In that inquest, it was my first time. So I was very observant about what I was seeing and what I was hearing. And I think overall, after hearing what I've heard and seeing what I've seen, I know absolutely for certain that everyone in this situation loses. And I think right now, as I sit here and I speak about Byron Dibasage, I'm thinking of his sister, Angie Assiniway. I'm thinking of her, of his father, who was at the inquest, who couldn't be there for too many times because he was hit by a car 1 week before Byron was shot. And Angie, his sister, was there, and she was very pregnant. So this was, I'm sure, a very, very hard time for this family. And I think one of the things that can happen in an inquest is that the person who has been shot, which is Byron, in this case, he becomes a statistics very, very quickly. He becomes an Aboriginal person, which he is not. He's an Ojibwe man, and he is not just has mental problems or alcohol problems. He is number one and first and foremost a human being.
Yes, exactly.
And I think out of all that what I've seen and heard, that is what is missing. And what is missing right now, not just within what we were talking about within the prison system, is we're missing the humanity is gone out of this system. It has become...
I have to agree with you, absolutely.
Well, what we see here is, in this case, what I saw was two policemen who were distraught, absolutely distraught. And what I've heard here was that a man who was armed with a pocket knife, whose last words to the store owners was, "I love you." The two witnesses who saw him before he was shot, less than 2 minutes before, just said to the police that he was humming and he was singing and he was begging for change.
Yes.
So there are very, very, like when very you think of these discrepancies within the testimonies that are taking place, right, that took place in this inquest. Very, very important points here. Number one, Byron's his history was brought up into the court as being evidence that needed to be looked at. Well, in fact, when the policeman who shot him, who said they didn't recognize that he was, number one, he was First Nations, they didn't know that. Number two, when Byron was in the park, they're saying that they didn't see that he was First Nations. So all of these things they're bringing up as somehow is supposed to be relevant to the situation, when in fact Byron already, the last two people who saw him, he showed no signs of violence towards any of those people.
He was not violent, exactly.
And when they take
He's
a look...
He's not violent, except when they commanded him, and it was in self-defense, it sounds like to me.
Well,
that
I think
he was
also, when you take a look at the evidence, all of the evidence, they brought in the experts to talk about how far was Byron away from the police officer when he was shot.
Yeah.
Well, it turned out maybe he was around 4 feet. Now, if the police officer, maybe it was dark, maybe he couldn't see him, but the fact that he was 4 feet away.
Yeah.
And when those two police officers bent over him in the park, the witness saw one of them pick up a jacket off the ground and put it on and go to the car. Byron was seen with a jacket when he left that store. when they took him and they did the examination of where the bullet holes went into his clothing, they only showed the sweatshirt, which would tell exactly what distance he was away from them.
Oh, it was a shot at point-blank range.
Exactly.
I also forgot to mention, Audrey, I listened to you, very, very, very good points. They knew that he had a history of both being in jail as a prisoner and also treated so-called in...
But at that point, they didn't know who he was.
Yeah, but they didn't know who he was. But what was a mark against Byron, which they used, was his psychiatric diagnosis. They
Even
called
then,
him
they
schizophrenic.
Didn't know.
But
they didn't know that.
They didn't know that at first. But, but they... would have, some people in the police force knew, because he had, actually the police knew about him.
Well,
about,
at that
about
point,
him,
well, what the evidence
but they
they're,
knew
they're
some
saying.
About his history.
But at that point of the shooting, at that point what they're saying is that they didn't know if he was First Nations or not.
That's true.
And yet,
yes.
when... he, the officer was asked to look out over the crowd and to tell who was First Nations in the crowd. He was probably about 15, 20 feet from me.
Yes.
And he could see. And
he could see.
And he could testify.
Yes, yes.
So
there's something very strange that they couldn't tell that he was First Nations or not. I find that,
well,
a little
you
bit
know
strange because this the police have dealt with other... you know, First Nations people. I don't, you know.
But you know
I
what,
know.
Don? In this whole situation, if it wasn't, it was if it was any other human being, you know, it really wouldn't matter because an innocent man in this case was shot. Now, all of the evidence that was brought up and the way it was brought up really was brought up to support the police's testimony.
Oh, definitely.
And even the witnesses who, the storekeepers, they came in and they told their story.
Yeah.
Byron, when he was at the store, when they came out, the woman who was the sister, she grabbed onto Byron's coat. At that point, he could have used a knife on her then.
Yeah,
but what did he do? He
didn't
pulled
do
away.
It.
And
That's
he
right.
went across the street and yelled at her, "I love you."
So that is that is not being of a violent person. But what I think is important, the police demonized them in some way. They were set. They were so used there. The police. This is not the first time that the police have shot somebody at point blank range with a psychiatric history, or they sense that they. Brian was already traumatized for years before because he was in and out. Well, this is many convictions.
Right.
A lot of and he spent some time in psychiatric wards, and the testimony that we heard during the inquest was framed according to the medical model. You know, they look at the diagnosis, but what, as you say, they lost the person. They didn't talk about him as a human being.
Well,
who is suffering and had been abused and re-traumatized, and plus the fact that he was not close to his family, we don't know.
Well,
we do know that there was a lot of distance between. He didn't get much support in the community at that point.
Well, I'm looking at the situation from also from the police's point of view.
Yes.
In that, in this situation right now, what they're being questioned to is their training. And what kind of training do they have? And in this case, when you hear the testimony of how quickly they went into the stance of firing, of what they call a ready stance, where they're getting ready to fire.
Yeah.
Very, very quickly they went into that, and that's
very fast.
Well, for me, you know what I'm saying at this point, I think that what I'm getting out of this, and I think that everyone really, really needs to pay attention to this, and why this is not on the table at this time of elections is because people like Byron are voiceless. People
exactly.
like Byron who and other people who have no power, have no one to speak to them. So this page is going to turn. Byron will be forgotten about, and another innocent man will die. And where does this leave society? It leaves us with it leaves us with another mark.
Right.
Now, in one suggestion, I'll make one more comment. I made one suggestion to that police officer that was there, and that was Markson.
Markson was the attorney, the lawyer for the police.
Yes.
Yeah, Joseph Markson.
Yes.
Yeah, I saw him there today.
And
anyway,
I made one suggestion to him.
Yeah, good.
And that was, if they could have those police officers meet with some healing in this community. And people will say, will laugh at me and will say, no. But I'll tell you what I said to them also. And they said, well, why do you people have so much patience? And I always say, what other road do you expect us to take? Because what's going on right now, this whole road has led to the place where we are right now, where we have prison systems. And obviously, these are not working. Guns are not working.
Obviously not. Right. We just have more. We are in a violent society. It's targeting some of the most vulnerable people like Byron
DeBusschere.
And there are many Byron DeBusschere's. In our society, whether as you know, if you're not white and you've been in a psychiatric hospital, you've been in jail, there's racism. Racism wasn't even mentioned. The word Aboriginal, and we'll get to this. I think we're about to have maybe a good First Nations song, Audrey, here.
Okay.
But just a little break here.
Such a
but
heated subject.
It is, and first of all, and many fine points you've made and relevant. So, Mark, we'll have a break, and with the song, thanks to your selection of Treaty, correct? We're going to listen to Treaty, which the Canadian government continues to break.
Much cheaper than our priceless land. But promises can disappear just like writing in the sand. Treaty, yeah. Treaty now. Treaty, yeah. Treaty now. Given up. This land was never bought and sold. The planting of the Indian Jack never changed our lore at all. Now two rivers run their course, separated for so long. I'm dreaming of a brighter day when the waters will be.
Thank you, Mark. Our trustee, very trusted, and creative technician, Mark Brill. Thank you, Mark, for that. Treaty, where we're talking with Audrey Redman about the very tragic death into a First Nation brother, Byron DeBassigue. It's about time I pronounce right. DeBassigue, Byron, 28 years old. The inquest was just over here in Toronto. As far as I'm concerned, this was pretty much another sham. I just want to touch on some of the major recommendations, and I'm sure, Audrey, you will have some comment on that and their implications in the time we have left. One of the recommendations, of course, and just to go back a bit, don't forget Brian was labeled, along with other labels, stigmatized as schizophrenic. Whether the police knew, some police had to know about that, but he had been in and out of jail and psychiatric ward, so he was known. He was known to the police establishment and the psychiatric establishment, marginalized, and so you would expect, well, if it was really an open jury, a sensitive jury would have maybe couldn't they have mentioned something about First Nations and about the need for perhaps taking some decent measures so that they could relate to people of First Nations who are First Nations with some sensitivity and understanding instead of pulling a gun on them, because Byron was not a violent person, so we understand. One of the recommendations was, yes, housing. But how many inquests? I've been to roughly 15 inquests, for God's sake, in about 12 to 15 years. They keep talking about involving psychiatric survivors, which includes Byron, because he was also a survivor of the prison system. And they don't do much. We're still 5 to 10,000 housing units short. So that was one thing. The other thing they talked about in the the recommendations, there were 14 of them, was to use the community treatment order more. The community treatment order is another mental health law that's one of the worst. And they want, and what it does is target people who refuse or likely to refuse with good reason psychiatric treatments, whether they're inside or in the community. So they want to increase that and broaden the community treatment orders, which is an Ontario law, and it's the law in four other provinces, so people can be picked up and forcibly taken to a psychiatric ward if they don't do as Big Brother psychiatrists want. So that was one thing. One of the better things was building was the recommendation around housing, but I can't say, and most of the other things were internal bureaucratic stuff about sharing information so that the right hand knows what the left hand is doing, which generally doesn't happen. So Audrey, do you want to make some comments about that?
Do I have about 1 minute?
Oh, my gosh. So all time
right.
goes. Okay.
Well, it's a sorry state that we're living in and a bad reflection on the society that we're living in now when innocent people are shot on the streets of downtown Toronto. And there's a big question of violence in this situation.
Yeah.
And I think that's what our society, and if you are at all interested in what's going on within your society, I think it's something maybe citizens need to maybe have a referendum on these things, because inevitably it's the community that the police are serving. And I think it's the citizens who have to make decisions on how that is going to happen. Especially when it comes to the vulnerable within our societies. So this, obviously, there was, in this case, you know, the question is what could have been done differently? And I think that's why this inquest is being held. So I think we as citizens need to hold, not to forget this, not to forget the people who are dying on the streets. And because if we wait much longer, then it's going to be too late. And I think we've heard that before.
Yes, we certainly have. That's well said. People who have been in the psychiatric system, as Bob Byron, or the prison system, have been seriously abused, that are traumatized. We don't have healing houses.
Oh,
we're missing healing houses. The healing circle wasn't even mentioned in the inquest. Never mind the term Aboriginal. There was like a total, like as if this was not, I mean, as if this person had no culture or background or,
well, in this
you know what
case,
I'm saying?
I think that he was, in this case, to me, he was a vulnerable human being.
Yes.
And I think that is something that I think all human beings, we're all vulnerable. There's not one of us who is not.
Exactly.
And I think that's, again, I would say that it's our responsibility as citizens of our society that we live in. How do we want that to look like? Or are we really powerless? I think that's the question.
Well, I'm glad that we're talking about this, because apparently the CBC will not talk the way we are talking. And when you read an article, probably in tomorrow's Globe or one of the mainstream papers, they will not talk. They will not, I'm sure, not put this in context, not talk about Byron DeBasigue.
Well, you know,
DeBasigue as a human being, but as a statistic, as you say, and try to demonize him and sensationalize the fact that he happened to have a small knife at the time, which he didn't use at the beginning at all. He did not threaten anybody in the park.
Well,
it was the police who were threatening him.
Yeah, we need to bring some humanity back into what we're dealing with, and right now all we're focusing on is economy, and right now human lives are becoming, they're paying the price for it.
Well, thank you very, very much. I know we can't cover, I know there's a lot more to say, and I want to thank you, Audrey. This is Audrey Redmond, who is co-hosting with me tonight in a special edition on the death of a brother, I wish I had met Byron DeBasigue. And
there's a lot of Byrons out there.
There are many, there are probably thousands, to have prevented this tragic end at this shooting by the police. And what we have to do, I think, is to keep this issue alive, and by the way, the police so-called mental health course is virtually non-existent. And one of the recommendations I forgot to mention is they're going to get a mental health professional in to teach them, but you know what, it's not going to make that much difference. It's not going to make that much difference.
Doesn't cut it.
And they're not going to, because they don't want to listen to Aboriginal people. They don't want to listen to psychiatric survivors in the police, unfortunately.
Well, we're First Nations people. The Aboriginal, that's another word that's used to eliminate that we, our different peoples. We are called different names.
Well,
First Nations people.
I say that with respect, Audrey, meaning the first or the First Nations or the first people.
Yes.
This is your land. We are on it by your permission. And I think white people should keep remembering that. It's too bad the police and other authorities don't. Anyway, I think we're up. I think we're at. And next show is, stay tuned. Don't touch that dial. You're on 88.1 FM. Anti-Psychiatry Radio on CCKLN, and next you will hear Maria Elena S. Escobar with Ventana Barrios. And don't forget to tune in 2 weeks from today for another edition of Anti-Psychiatry Radio.
Thank you very much, John.
Thank you.
Have a great week.
You too.
Keep it deep in the underground. CKLN 88.1 FM.